The meeting of the, I'm going to call the July 7th, 2022 meeting of the Energy and Environment and Sustainability Committee to order and ask if the clerk would kindly call the roll.
Amanda Jo Green.
Present.
Gina Hansett.
Present.
Phil Erner.
Present.
Joseph Maloney.
Here.
Eric Stewart is not with us tonight. You have a quorum, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Would someone like to volunteer to lead the Pledge of Allegiance?
I would be happy to do it, Madam Chair.
You'd be most welcome. Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And sadly, we have yet another week of tragedy to just remember and acknowledge. It seems endless these days. Okay, do I have a motion to approve the minutes of the last Energy and Environment Committee meeting of June 9th?
A move.
Motion. Second.
Okay, I saw Gina's hand, and I heard, I think, Phil's voice. Madam Clerk. It was Joe?
Okay. No, feels good. Either way.
All good. Okay. And now I'd like to ask, I believe I saw Catherine Beinkaffner, Chair of the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency. Dr. Beinkaffner, do you want to give us an update, please?
Did you want Kathy Nolan to go first? That would be okay by me.
Okay, yes. I was going to put her first on the resolutions, but I just to be on the safe side, thank you for reminding me. And Legislator Nolan, you please remind us which resolution you want to speak to, and we'll take your comments and then move on.
Thank you very much, Chair Green and Dr. Beinkaffner. The resolution is Resolution 342, basically a memorializing resolution to support the Birds and Bees Protection Act at the New York state level. People may know this act. It focuses on removing neonicotinoid insecticides from corn, soy, and wheat seeds. Based on information done in a very large study by Cornell showing that farmers would not be harmed financially by the removal of those insecticides. The insecticides go in with the seeds prophylactically, so they're often going into healthy fields, and they can contaminate the fields with the insecticide enough to sterilize the soil, which is not good for growing. Pollinators are severely limited in New York State. It hits the orchard crops the most, and we're starting to see effects in all animal species near heavily treated fields, particularly important in insect feeding birds. And we're also seeing evidence in other animals such as fish populations around the world near these fields that have been treated with these chemicals, and in large mammals in the United States where white-tailed deer have been shown to have stunted and in some cases malformed young. There also are some worrisome case control studies for possible impacts in humans. And the chemicals bioaccumulate year after year because of their long half-life. They will actually degrade and go away if we stop using them, and getting them off these saturated seeds removes probably 80 to 90% of their use in New York State. The Senate passed a bill to ban those particular uses. And the last year and this year, the Assembly passed a bill to that same effect, but they had some slight differences in language in terms of what to do if farmers had trouble getting seeds that were not coated with the insecticide. And so the it took a long time to get a what's called a same as, where the language in the Assembly bill is the same as the language in the Senate. We've now achieved that, but it didn't happen in a way that let it get out of committee before the end of the term this spring. And so we are putting on, doing everything we can to get this out of committee in the fall and get it passed. And then if we need to make adjustments to the mechanisms that the Senate wasn't happy with and then the Assembly wasn't happy with, we can do that. So I did bring this resolution to the Ulster County Soil and Water Conservation District Board to ask if they saw problems for farmers in Ulster County from adopting it. There were no criticisms or concerns. So I think that we should have broad support for this. I'm not sure how much neonicotinoid coated seed is used in Ulster County, if any. That's one of the things I'm trying to find out.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions or I'm going to actually ask that we I will take a motion for discussion on Resolution 242 so that while Legislator Nolan is here, we can take action.
So moved.
Legislator Erner, second. Legislator...
Joe or Gina, we both raised our hands.
Okay, and I see that Legislator Maloney has his hand up, so I'm assuming that's a fresh hand, not from earlier. Okay.
So I actually think pesticides have more involvement with cancers and autoimmune diseases and a lot of other things than we know, and the entire country has gone waited way too long to do something about it. The only issue I have with this is, you know, how little, unfortunately, some of these memorializing resolutions do to move the meter. Why not make it an Ulster County law? I think that would speak to Albany. I think you'd have the votes. If the experts in Ulster County are saying it wouldn't hurt, we could do it here in Ulster County, even if there are a few outliers still using it. It's something I bet you we could check into and enforce. Why not make it an actual Ulster County resolution? I think that would speak to Albany way more than a memorializing resolution. And I think you'd have the support to do it.
May I reply?
Yeah, please.
Yeah. So we could look into that. We think we thought we were going to have passed this spring and that it would address all of New York State, and many places in New York State use a lot more of this insecticide than we this class of insecticides than we do. But it's a fair point and we could look into it. We did have questions about whether even state law was superseded by federal law on this. So we might run into problems whether a county can do that. But I especially since it stalled this spring when we thought it was going to go forward, I think that's a reasonable approach, and I'm happy to ask some of the lawyers involved with the coalition working on this to look into that.
Thank you. And I will say that many laws, particularly around waste issues, but many other issues that became state law started in Ulster County, bring your own bag, and the composting or food waste diversion, et cetera. Any other, yes, Legislator Erner, please.
Thank you. I'm a sponsor of this as well. As often is the case, I think we need to go farther, and one way we might be able to do that is on the county level. And so that's one of the topics I have under business at the end of the meeting.
I will say that the Ulster County already has a policy in regard to its own properties of not using these sorts of insecticides, and in fact, insecticides and herbicides in general. So Ulster County is already there with our own properties. Whether we can extend this to private property in Ulster County is the question. We do think that the memorializing resolutions will have an impact. We are seeking to get them in many of the counties that have legislators who were kind of on the fence about this. And we don't need many votes. The bill did pass in both houses. So it's a question of really just showing that the public wants the bill to get out of committee, come to a vote again in the now same as version, and then go to the governor's desk. So it's very, very close to being a statewide ban with a lot of research that has gone into it to support it.
I do have a question just to shake my memory. For the Ulster County law, is it just glyphosate or is it all pesticides?
I believe that it's all herbicides. There are provisions to get an exemption, but I believe all herbicides are not used on county grounds. And the pesticides, I think, is part of the green building proposal. We hire a company that only uses green products, and I guess that goes to our landscaping as well. Do you know further, Mark, Deputy Executive Ryder?
I believe that's the case. I know definitely the herbicides. I mean, because we've seen applications for exemptions from CMRR and other organizations. So the herbicides is definitely true. I believe the pesticides has to do with the buildings.
And the reason I ask is that I am seeing, you know, for a while, for roadside vegetation, I recall the county actually cutting, but not spraying. And I'm starting to see and get complaints of, you know, where you see the vegetation is in place, but it's turned brown. And I haven't been careful about whether those are town roads or county roads to distinguish that. But is there a good way to direct people, or if I have a concern myself, where should that go?
You can send it to me, Chair, and I'll get it to our, you know, or you can send it to Commissioner Masterson as well. But
okay,
either way, I mean, we are not spraying, so it's likely either a state or a town road.
Right.
The state still does use herbicides. We've tried to work with them on it, but they insist that the amount of roads that they have doesn't allow them to just rely on mechanical. We did get clarity with the Department of Public Works when I was in the legislature previously, and we passed the Ulster County as a pollinator-friendly county law that the DPW was not using pesticides or herbicides, and they were using mechanical, and they were open to actually trying to adjust the timing of the mechanical clearance of the side of the roads to protect the pollinating plants. There's still some work to go back and do on that, and so maybe in collaboration with members of this committee, we can work on that as the summer goes along.
Manna, can I make a quick suggestion question?
Yes.
Could we have Fawn, on behalf of our committee, send out an email to every municipality in the county that has a highway department and ask if they still are using pesticides or have they gone completely mechanical? And by next month, we could have a list of any and all municipalities. At that point, we could have a discussion because we can govern them with a resolution. Obviously, we can't tell the state to stop doing it in our county, but But if five or six municipalities, maybe we could talk them out of it, urge them out of it, or set a county law and stop that as well, because there's probably more municipal cared for roads than even county roads in this county. So we may not have done as much as we wanted to do with that. It'd be interesting to see. It's pretty easy to do. Is anybody on the committee not into us sending a request, a question out to every municipality in the town? It wouldn't take long, right, Fawn?
And I'll sign that letter.
That's fine.
Okay. I don't even think it's something we have to sign. We could just, if we all just say okay, I think we could send that, Fawn could send that out on our behalf.
On behalf of the committee.
Yeah. But, and follow up. If you don't get a response, follow up a couple of times. And then by next month, if we don't know about Town of Lloyd, you know, we'll have three requests to know and next to their name.
I think that probably we make a motion to request and that. And Fawn, I want to congratulate the legislative staff. I believe Chelsea Villalba is now helping again. Is that the case?
I believe she might be soon. I'm not sure that's an announcement that I'm authorized to make.
All right. But I was thinking that, you know, she'd be really good at following up if we need.
You would be.
Yeah.
I'll make a motion to send a letter on behalf of our committee and our chairman, Joe Green, to every municipality in the county that has a highway department at request, whether they use herbicides or pesticides.
And I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Signify by raising your hand and or saying aye. All right. Anybody opposed? Motion carries. And I think that's a good step in the right direction. Great.
And one other thing on the resolution 342, or actually, I guess, related to this, is that there are several municipalities in Ulster County that have taken proactive action to protect pollinators, including Marbletown and Woodstock. New Paltz has at the university and has pollinator fields. So there's a lot of very good pollinator support going around Ulster County at the municipal level and at universities, schools, and businesses. So,
great. You know, I think we never resolved. We opened resolution 242 for discussion, but I think while we're on the topic, we should resolve the memorializing resolution. So I'd like to call the question, unless there's any further discussion. Okay, all in favor of resolution 242 supporting New York State Bill S699D and New York State, that's the Senate bill, and the Assembly Bill A7429A. The New York State Birds and Bees Protection Act. All in favor, please signify by raising your hand and or saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, the motion carries. And I had to go to the eye doctor earlier, and so my pupils are still dilated and it's hard to read, so bear with me.
Thank you very much. Appreciate
You're
it.
You're very welcome.
And thank you for the discussion and the support.
And thank I can you. Read the resolutions for you if you like, Madam Chair, when we get there.
Okay. Let's, at this point, go back to the reports, unless somebody has an objection. And Dr. Beinkaffner, if you would give us an update from the UCRRA, the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency.
Okay, I have quite a few items, so I'm just going to read them because it'll be more efficient than blathering on. So we've started the executive director job search. The board is actively searching for the agency's next executive director. The position is being advertised on Solid Waste Association job boards through the Solid Waste Association of North America, the New York State Association of Recycling, United States Composting Council and in many other ways. And we actually started interviewing this week for the position. SUNY Stony Brook is going to be doing a waste audit. The agency is participating in a waste audit, studying being conducted by SUNY Stony Brook's Waste Data and Analysis Center. The study seeks to understand disposal patterns and waste composition of municipal solid waste and recycling streams across New York State. The researchers will visit the agency once per year over the next 5 years and sample and sort trash and recycling. We expect the research team to come again this August, and we're very interested in the data they'll be collecting. No summary is available yet, as the study is ongoing. But I know that that relates to the thing the Department of the Environment has been working on, the reuse center. But we weren't going to have these results available in time for that project. Municipal composting pilot project. New York State recently announced a new funding source available to increase residential food scrap recycling programs. The director of sustainability, that would be Angelina, is working on a grant proposal that would create new programs and partnerships to collect food scraps at Ulster County Municipal Recycling Drop-Off Centers, and will be hosting an informational meeting later this month to identify towns that wish to participate in the pilot project. So she's actually working on applying for a grant, but in the meantime, we're going to try to seek some buy-in from some of the local towns, because the location for pickup of the food scraps would be at the transfer stations. And we'd have like a trailer there, so people could bring their food scraps, put it in the buckets inside the trailer, and then on the appointed day, I think the town would be asked to bring the trailer to OCRA. But it's a project we're working on, so I can't tell you that that's actually what's going to happen. Household hazardous waste. The agency held its second HHW collection program of the year on June 26th. This was our first paint care collection. We're now able to accept latex paint thanks to a statewide law that establishes a product stewardship program for various paints and architectural coatings. A total of 249 residents participated in the event, and the event was very, very successful thanks to the team's coordination and planning and the excellent vendor, Clean Harbors. We were sold out, actually. All the time slots we had available were taken up. Our next household hazardous waste program is scheduled for August 20th, and registration is open now for that. You have to sign up for a time slot. And also, if you have additional paint that you want to dispose of, my understanding is that the local Sherwood Williams and Herzog's Home Center stores will actually accept up to 5 gallons for drop-off at any time, no appointment necessary at their locations. So that's a pretty good thing for people to learn about.
And is that both for water-based and oil-based?
It doesn't specify here.
Okay.
What kinds of paint? So I guess all paint. And apparently, new Paint Care New York program was sent to all the town supervisors and mayors on June 9th. Let's see. Public education. Our recycling outreach team has been doing outreach and community engagement through partnerships, collaborations with various climate smart task forces, and various local schools and libraries. For the month of July, the outreach topic will be Plastic-Free July Challenge, educating about the impacts of plastic pollution, its recycling limitations, and how to reduce your use of plastic. They installed an educational display about plastic pollution at the Gardner Public Library and will be up all month long, and are looking for more locations to do public education displays. The team is partnering with libraries to teach children about ocean plastic. Collaboration on the summer reading program theme, Oceans of Possibilities. They will be at the Ellenville Library on July 27th, Rosendale Library on July 21st. They'll be hosting a booth at the Kingston Farmers Market on July 30th. Their other campaigns are ongoing on the radio, print, social media, and newsletter. So that's what our group has been up to. And any questions? I could entertain them.
Yes, Legislator Erner, please.
Dr. Beinkhaffner, thank you for your presentation. I'm pleased especially to hear about the food scrap pickup proposal. That's something I've been hearing requests for expanding throughout our county, so thank you.
I think it'll be really good for residents because I myself would be happy to do that, although I have a compost bin, but I would be better at just taking it over to the transfer station. And I think it's going to work out. Angelina is good at preparing proposals for grants, and I think she's going to have it well worked out before we apply so that the questions are answered right there in our proposal.
Thank you. And if there are no other questions, I'd like to
I have one quick question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I think in a recycling oversight committee, I had talked to Tim DeGraff about the expansion of your sorting abilities and the study that's going to need to be done to change the layout of the RRA. And just by having, as these loads are being dropped off, I guess you never used to call out and take the same look at the smaller loads, the regular residential loads, the smaller contractors. And now you've been able to divert quite a bit of material into the compost, into reusable piles, which has really decreased the amount of solid waste we're sending off. And it's been a well-known thing for years that if we really expanded, maybe brought in and spent a little money on some technology as well, but that ability that we'd really be decreasing solid waste even more, which is one of the single biggest issues in the county for years. So Tim DeGraff told me that he was on it. He did not need the legislature's help to fund this study, to order this study, that the RRA was on this and it was going to be done soon. And I just let him know that I'm going to be asking about it twice a month and looking for updates, because this the first thing, ordering a study is not that hard. And I think we're years past when this study should have been done to let us know both the cost and what it's going to look like over there at the RRA, what it's going to take, because there is going to be some serious construction needed and to move some things around logistically as well. So has the study been discussed over the last month since I've talked to Tim DeGraff? And how much further along are we than we were when Tim promised me he was on it?
We've been discussing the possibility of having deliveries separated, the trash and garbage from the C&D materials, construction and demolition materials. And we've been discussing whether to build a separate building, maybe use the existing building for the C&D and build a different building for our current stuff. Because what we do is we divert a lot of the stuff off that tipping floor. That's where we take out the air conditioners. That's where we take out propane tanks, all kinds of metal objects and things like that. And it's kind of a dangerous place because you have the big trucks dumping, you have the big grapple picking up the material and dumping it over the wall into the truck waiting down below, and you've got people trying to remove stuff from the waste stream. So we're thinking about trying to reinvent that building in terms of maybe some conveyor belts or some other way of getting the diverted materials out quickly rather than a person having to lift it up and move it somewhere.
See, that thank you for that answer, but it kind of confuses me because I thought it was kind of settled that both the RRA, the legislature, environmental groups, everyone kind of understood at this point that part of this process would be bringing in a firm, which we don't think would be all that expensive, that specializes and has worked with hundreds of transfer stations and will logistically, you know, there's firms that come in when you have a parking lot and they could show you how to lay out a parking lot, have 80 more spots. That was just done in Kingston. Saugerties is talking about doing it. Same exact thing here, a little more complex, but there's firms that is their expertise. And the last discussion I had with Tim DeGraff and Laura Petit and several others, it was kind of settled that the study is part of this process, that I never heard anywhere along the line over the last few months that we were just going to put our heads together and kind of figure this out. It, you know, it's far more complex than that. And it's not that much money. And I was promised specifically by Tim DeGraff that this study was coming. And now I'm hearing that we just spitballing ideas ourselves. This is what, because it's already taken way too long. We should have had this study.
Speak for Tim because I'm not him. I didn't make any promises. I'm just telling you what's been going on. He may have more plans in the works than I know about. We're also considering changing the traffic pattern so that you don't have to come out where you come into the yard with the trucks. So they would go out another way behind the office and things like that. So there's a lot that we're considering, but it takes time to work it out. And then it isn't going to happen instantly.
Well, it's never going to happen without this study is the way that I understand. When you bring in this firm, I think even the traffic that you're talking about would be something that, you know, the engineers and whatnot involved with whatever firm you end up going with. But I just don't think this is something that Tim DeGraff and a couple of employees over at the RRA, or I don't think that's their expertise. These kinds of logistics we're talking about, there are firms out there that give you kind of an overhead schematic of what your options are and what the different technology is you could bring in, where you can move this building, how you do it, even get a cost analysis. And I just politely frustrated that talking to Tim DeGraff, just last month, it just sounds differently than what he's been doing for the last month after talking to me.
So I'm going to jump in and suggest that that Dr. Bonkaffner take back your concern and your suggestion. I also want you to be aware, and Director Nick Vazda will be speaking to this in a minute, that there is for the Reuse Innovation Center, there will be a firm that will be looking at the whole system and making recommendations, not specifically what you're asking, Joe, but, and in addition, the Zero Waste Implementation Planning Working Group is also looking to bring on an expert in waste diversion planning. And that would include this, but I hear what you're saying.
Has that request gone out? Have we hired that firm? Has the request gone out? Mark could tell me whether it's an RFP or an RFQ.
No.
Reuse. Are you talking about the reuse?
The Reuse RFP? Innovation Center has gone out, and let's
back tomorrow. But
yeah,
and the responses are due tomorrow.
Talk about it. And the other is still in planning, but we expect to be able to move the zero waste plan through as professional services. And we don't know that yet, so I'll report on that next month. So if we can, Nick, you want to pick it up where where we left off, if you wouldn't mind, Director Vazda.
Sure thing. Thank you, Madam Chair. As Deputy Executive Ryder said, the Reuse Innovation Center planning study is, we're in the process of doing an RFP for that study. The proposals are due tomorrow, and then we'll be evaluating the proposals. The key thing, one of the key assumptions we made in the RFP and what we intend to put in the scope of work for this project is that this will be a a single facility that diverts waste from either the MSW or the C&D waste streams. One of the critical things that has to happen, or I suppose another critical assumption, is we're assuming that the waste will be separated from the waste stream prior to arriving at the facility. This is where it ties into the work that UCRA is doing about separating things at the tipping floor, also the work that municipal transfer stations are doing around the county, and the work that nonprofit organizations like the Restore are doing. So we are asking the consultant that we hire to identify what those waste streams are that have been separated, and then find out the ones that give us the biggest bang for the buck, and then do something about it with this facility. That's the general.
Go ahead, Legislator Maloney. I see your hand.
So with what we're getting back from these proposals, you were saying, is assuming that all the separating is done?
Correct. Well, yeah. So in asking for the planning study, asking to do the work on the planning study, we had to assume some boundaries around what this type of facility would do. And one of those boundaries was it's not going to take an MSW waste stream and have employees or machinery separate it. The items will be separated into component parts before it arrives at the facility. You know, for example, clean wood from C&D material. So the clean wood would have been separated. It arrives at the reuse center and then is processed there and resold or reused somehow.
So some of this and what we're able to do eventually there is going to revolve around what's going on over at the RRA and our ability to store, which is one of the big issues here, the room to store some of these materials that we're going to want to bring over to you. And that is part of what I was just saying before. We really have to get going over at the RRA for this all to work. And right now, the RRA is not physically and logistically set up to be the partner that we're just going out to RFP to build a small facility to use. So once again, we really need the RRA to get going on a real plan that's going to involve a study. This is all related, and we need to get going on it. This is taking too long. Thank you.
And the last thing I want to say is just a reminder that the RRA does have adjacent property, and I'm sure the consultant that's hired for the Reuse Innovation Center will take that into consideration. It's not the only property. There are a lot of properties in Ulster County that might be good candidates, but just to mention that. Okay. Anything else on the RRA? Can we go over to Environmental Management? I mean, Department of Environment. And anything else, Nick, that you have to report?
The other items I have are related to the zero waste annual report that we submitted at the beginning of the month. The reuse innovation planning study was one of them, but a couple of other high points of zero waste activities that the county has been doing. We develop procedures around the for implementation of the Food Waste Prevention and Recovery Act. Those guidelines are posted on the website. First cohort has been notified as of last year, and we reported on that progress earlier this year. The next round, which includes food waste generators from whatever the maximum amount could be, all the way down to 0.75 tons per week, will be identified and notified in September of this year that they will be regulated starting on January 1st of 2023. We implemented an environmental considerations checklist, which I believe the committee is familiar with from a resolution earlier this year, that is a checklist for capital projects that the county is executing. And a couple of items on that checklist relate to zero waste. One of them asks capital project developers to review the intent of the resolution 451 of 2019, which is zero waste resolution for the county. The other one is to incorporate considerations for separation and diversion of C&D waste from demolition projects. And we're working on developing best practices and contract language, et cetera, for that going forward. And the last thing I have is our Green Business Champions program is moving along. We're continuing to get businesses coming into the program. That has a couple of action items that are waste related. So we ask those who are getting certified as partner or then leader or then champion to complete actions that are related to waste reduction or green purchasing about items that will ultimately reduce waste. That's all I have on the report, unless any questions.
Okay. Go ahead, Legislator Unger, please.
Thank you, and thank you, Director Vaza, for your report. Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to really study the environmental considerations checklist closely enough, but would you and your department be willing to advise us here in the legislature about adding different things? We're considering some in new business later, for example, some additional regulations tonight, but could you advise us on additional considerations that we might want to add on that checklist in the future?
The starting point for the checklist when we developed it was every environmental regulation or policy that the county has on the books that would apply to a capital project. So that includes the waste items, green fleet, other things. There are a few other items that were added around energy efficiency and other items around fleet, but those could be a start for further discussion. And then certainly the intent of this checklist is that any additional policies or requirements that come into being will be added as part of the. To answer your question, I don't have a large list in mind, but we can certainly discuss it.
I do have a question about, the Ulster County Fair is coming up, and they will be diverting some of the waste, but if there's any way we can, or your department can get a report on what they have been and what they're planning for this year. And the other thing I wanted to mention was the green business. It was challenge and now it's
champions.
Say again?
Champions.
Champions, yes. Mm-hmm. We are trying to, we being the Climate Smart Committee, are trying to encourage vendors that are using green building practices or have green building products to participate in the Ulster County Fair in what became called Climate Row in the main tent. And so I believe Michael Darcy was going to be looking into that. And just a reminder, maybe, I know he was not feeling well a few days ago, but if he's, back, time is drawing nigh for the Ulster County Fair, which is August 2nd through 7th. And anybody on this call that would like to volunteer to help educate people on climate solutions is welcome to let me know and sign up. We could use help. And there will be nonprofits will have a double booth as well as the Climate Smart Committee, but we're also looking for vendors. Anything else from Department of Environment?
Nothing else, Madam Chair. Thanks.
Thank you. And thank you for your good work. Environmental Management, is Dave here or?
He is.
Yes, there's Dave. Okay, great. Dave Haldeman, Chair of the Environmental Management Council.
Thank you very much. Just very briefly, we have requested of DEC that we have a presentation on sustainable tourism in the Catskills at our last meeting, and McCray Burhan, who is the Catskill Park coordinator, did that presentation. There's a lot of, there's at least concern among our members of the popularity of the Catskills and then the overuse at particular sites within the Catskills. For example, and I don't know the dates on these figures, but Catterskill Falls in the past only had about 30,000 visitors. The most recent tabulation was 200,000 per year. So Mr. Burnham is focused on visitor use management, recreational infrastructure, and minimal impacts on the environment. It's a big task. He's relatively new to it, 6 to 9 months, but seems to have a good handle on it. I think they're working in particular on areas where there's heavy traffic to make sure there's adequate parking, that there's adequate restrooms and other facilities, that there's adequate garbage facilities, that if trails need to be widened so that people aren't making multiple different trails to a particular area, that they're looking at how to balance the needs of the natural environment and the hunters and fishers with the numbers of outside visitors coming to the park. It was all discussed. It was a good presentation, and it's nice to know that they are very much concerned about and looking into and trying various ways to deal with the problems that were presented. The only other things that were mentioned, Representative Erner had requested that we take a look at the county's open space plan. We discussed doing just that. It may take us several months, but we're going to take a look at it and see whether there's areas of concern that need to be addressed or updated. Also, there was one town in which they had an interesting idea that's presenting to the board, in that with new construction, they're suggesting, highly recommending that new construction be use a heat pump source of heating and cooling, and perhaps even adding an additional tax to those new facilities that do not choose to use a heat pump. We thought that it was an interesting aspect. Other than that, that's all I have for this evening.
Any questions or comments? Legislator Erner, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Haldeman, for your presentation. And in terms of the parking and traffic and accommodating that, do you have a sense in terms of expanding transit there? You think that we should go through our authority here in the county through UCAT, or is that since it crosses county lines, maybe the state needs to get involved? Or do you see that as potentially helping, not having to expand parking areas and cutting down on traffic pollution and other problems?
I believe that he actually did address that, and there is talk about busing and having shuttles to certain highly used locations. So that is in the works. It's being discussed.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes, please.
I also, it seems like a timely thing. At the Economic Development Committee the other night, Lisa Berger made a presentation on tourism. And in all of our print ads and online presence this year, they have a whole section that's on a lot of it that says Leave No Trace, that talks about people, you know, tourists and, of every, you know, no matter what kind of tourists they are, being courteous to our environment and watching what they do with their waste and you know, how they behave when they're here. So it's a really nice advertising that tourism has put in all of their new publications.
Hopefully they recycle the books 5 minutes after looking at them.
We haven't printed them in a couple of years. It's the first time we're reprinting them, and I don't think we've printed them since 2020. Manna, you're muted.
At Revival and the Ulster County Fair, we would have, you know, big cardboard boxes for people to put any kind of paper in on the way out that they didn't want to hold on to. Anyway, if we're complete, I'd like to get back to the resolutions, because we also have guests, and if a guest is from the public wants to speak to a given resolution, I think we can hear from them. So we're up to resolution number 343, amending. Fawn, if you would, because my eyesight is compromised tonight, if you wouldn't mind.
I will just say we skipped the first resolution. So resolution 341, amending the 2022-2027 capital improvement program, establishing capital project number 642, ARP, homeowner energy improvement and job training project, amending the 2022 capital fund budget, Department of Finance, Division of Recovery and Resilience.
And I'd like to ask if Deputy Ryder would speak a little bit to this
first.
Move to discuss.
Thank you. Second for the move to discuss. Legislator Hanson. Okay, please.
Sure. So as many of you remember, we had a CDBG grant that we submitted and got for $800,000 to do a low-income homeowner energy improvement project. That came with us saying that we would seek a match of $500,000, and this is using ARPA funds to that match. It's also expanding the program to do a lot of on-the-job training and workforce development, and not just doing the energy improvements. So this will help us equip our workforce to do this work in the future as well.
I don't have it pulled up, but who's listed as the sponsor?
The chairman of the ARPA Special Committee, Peter Criswell, and Deputy Chair Thomas Corcoran.
Okay. Mark, this is how many positions? This is one position?
This won't be used for a position. It'll be, we'll be contracting this out.
Okay. And the money, and then when the money dries up, it sunsets?
This is just a one-time grant, like using the ARPA funds. So this would be, again, this won't be a paid position. This would be a contract through like a rough.
Some firm that.
That would do this training, and yeah, once the funds are gone, the program would be over.
And specifically, the positions you would be getting trained for to eventually go and achieve are?
They would be private. Like, they would then move on and do work for organizations that do this work.
And what kind of work? Like
energy retrofits, so like especially with low-income homeowners, it could be shoring up the envelope of the home to make it more energy efficient, looking at the windows, replacing parts of their HVAC system. It's just doing home improvements to make it more energy efficient.
Those, okay. Those are all expensive things, especially at this point, expensive things. So we're teaching the homeowner, we're teaching somebody to do construction work that's green construction work?
Correct.
It's likely to be what was Citizens for Local Power. And they're now Communities for Local Power. They've done three rounds of training of mostly low income youth and others, underemployed people, to take training from very highly qualified contractors, and most of them are now actually employed. So this would be training a new crop of people to be able to do these energy audits and retrofits, and the fact that it's focusing on low-income households, I think, you know, has a double benefit. And I do want to say that I was a beneficiary of a deep energy retrofit on my home, and my bills were cut by 2/3.
While they're training, they're going to be doing the actual work on low-income households?
Yes, supervised.
Correct. So that's where they'll be doing it.
Yeah, and that we have that $800,000 in other funds to help with those. So this money is really towards the workforce, the CDBG grant, which is for this low-income program, will then fund the actual improvement.
How much per household? 30,000. What did I see that in there? It's up to 30,000 per household.
So I don't have access to the backup for this committee but I don't. That sounds about right.
Yeah. I was at the ARPA meeting on this because fund. May I be added as a sponsor, even though
and that covers materials, and we're paying the firm to do the work while training a couple of local young residents?
It's way more than a couple.
How many people are going to be in the program for 800,000?
That I don't recall.
I don't have that exact number.
Give me an estimate.
I will say that the training programs are 15 to 20 people that Empower Kingston. That's a sort of a pilot, and this in itself is a pilot to expand to the hundreds of thousands of building retrofits that are proposed in the climate action plan.
So, and my last question, the firms that we bring in to do that, they're being paid to do their work, and the people that are being trained are being paid to train?
Correct.
So how much, what's the breakdown of money going to the house itself? So if you're doing $30,000 worth of work, how much of that is going to end up being salary? Do you know what I'm saying?
So it's two separate pots. I just want to clarify that. There's the $800,000 of CDBG that will go directly towards those improvements. And then there's this resolution, which funds the workforce development piece. So, you know, if you're looking at 30,000, what's 800,000 divided by 30,000? That's about the amount of houses that will
70, help, yeah.
25 or so, right? So 25 or so houses. And then
the other money. All right.
I think that with this 500,000 is probably going to be roughly 20 to 30 people that will receive the training.
Legislator Erner.
Thank you. I believe I understand what's going on here. We had approved this 800,000, and now there's another. We're allocating $500,000 to the ARPA. correct me if I'm wrong.
That's correct.
Okay. Before I get into my other comments, I just wanted to offer a friendly correction amendment. It says, whereas Citizens for Local Power, Chair Green, as you mentioned, they changed their name. Let's just change that to Communities for Local Power to reflect their current name, please, if I might so move.
Okay.
One, two, three, four. In the fifth whereas, it cites Citizens for Local Power, and we're going to change that Citizens to Communities.
That's correct. I'll second that. All in favor of that amendment?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, the motion passes to amend resolution number 341.
Mark, have we discussed this with BOCES or OCC?
Yes.
I believe that those conversations have been had.
But they're not going to be a part of this? I mean, don't they have programs like this? Certainly BOCES does. Why wouldn't we just empower BOCES to do something that they already do?
If I may, and Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Employment Training and Workforce Development Department has been coordinating with SUNY Ulster, with BOCES, with Communities for Local Power and others, sort of a green careers pipeline. And so there's no reason not to include BOCES, but it specifically does include Communities for Local Power because they have this direct specific experience of having trained several cohorts very effectively. Not only trained, but
who you just mentioned, that's a company?
They're non-profit.
They're not-for-profit, they're a company.
Not-for-profit corporation. And they have the internship already with OET. That doesn't mean that some of this money won't go towards, like you said, BOCES, which in that same whereas that you just made the amendment, it talks about now Communities of Local Power says, you know, has a successful internship, but we're also going to work with local contractors and others, i.e. BOCES, to provide the on-the-job training.
So in a previous life, when I was at Director of Employment and Training, we had several training programs we did with all kinds of local businesses and all kinds of demand occupations, where we would pay like the first $5,000 of someone's salary while they were in training. And if the employer liked them, that they might, you know, they might continue, they might hire them when the job, you know, when we were done paying that section. I suspect this sounds like it's very similar. And they have usually people who are displaced workers, maybe people who haven't worked in a while, displaced homemakers who are coming back into the job market. It behooves off employment training to get those people into these programs first, but they do a lot of youth programs the same way. And we got a lot of people that, even people coming out of prison and things that an employer might be nervous about hiring, we would bond them and pay the first $5,000 of their salary while they worked. And we would have a job coach with them and make sure that they were, you know, showing up to work on time, behaving appropriately, and those kind of things. So
it's the same. Fawn, that's the same concept, but it's a much different process, is what I'm saying. I was asking about the process.
And I see Legislator Erner's hand, but I just want to ask Deputy Ryder if he would see if the Department of Employment and Training could convene that green job pipeline around this topic and see if you know if they haven't already, and the planning department may already have done that and I'm just not aware, but I've been really impressed with how well BOCES and the community college and the other groups that are doing this kind of workforce development around housing, around buildings, really have started to coordinate instead of kind of working in silos. And I think it would be really valuable around this project moving forward. But hopefully, so this came out, we're not just discussing it, we actually can vote on it, because I just want to be sure. I was confused whether ARPA, Director Dennis Doyle did from planning did an excellent presentation, but and covered all your questions. I just don't have it at the top of my head. Legislator Erner, please.
Okay, thank you. Let's see here. I looked at the numbers, the estimate of 25 to 30K per home, and I spoke with a business that does this kind of work and just checked, and they even might have estimated lower than that. So that reassured me that we're not underestimating what this is going to cost for a home. So that gets my support. I like that it mentions things about air quality, just so the committee knows. I'm still trying to get us better informed about that from some local organizations that study indoor air quality, who have, when they do talk to us, they'll explain to us how you can't really retrofit a home for energy efficiency if the air indoors isn't in good shape. But I see that that's a part of what this would do. So that makes me happy as well. In terms of the administrative cost, I see $100,000 for that, and then the $500 for homeowners. Now, is that right that 1/6 of the total is going to go to administration, or is that, can we also include the $800,000, so it's actually more like 1/14 is for the administration?
I mean, I think there's slightly separate programs, but you could count that the $800 in there as well. But it's $500 here. So it would mean, it would mean $400 towards that out of this specific resolution, and $100 towards the administration.
Wait, can you just, I'm sorry, Deputy Xavier, right? You said $400,000 is the direct assistance?
Yeah, I don't have, again, that backup in front of me, but this total amount is $500,000. So if there's $100,000 in administrative fees off the top of that, then that would leave $400,000 for the workforce development work. It would also leave the $800,000 that will go towards the direct aid.
I think I see what's going on here, actually. I think the $500K comes from ARPA, and then the state's given $40K, and the CDF, the community development, $60K. I am looking at the backup, so I think just this would just be the direct assistance, which would be essentially the training we're talking about, it looks like.
Correct.
Okay.
And, that training includes getting the work done. And I expect that the materials, I don't want to say it wrong, but they are included in the overall project, clearly. Any other questions on this? So maybe we can...
Last one would just be criteria, and obviously with 30 people having this benefit, you're talking a very small percentage point of people that will be affected. How are you going to ensure equity and fairness with this process?
So that's built into any of these CDBG funded programs. We have to show that we've advertised it, that we've done our due diligence and ensured that everybody has kind of equal opportunities. So that's, we on a yearly basis get CDBG funds, and they have to go to disadvantaged populations. And so the planning department has that process now.
You're going to spread it out around the county?
Yes.
Proportionately to the percentage of residents in each municipality?
As much as we can that we're allowed, you know, again, there's only certain disadvantaged zones in the county. And so I don't know whether we can say two.
But Dover will get one. I get that. But Saugerties, Esopus, Woodstock, town of Ulster, Kingston are going to have a fair the same percentage of residents they have per, you know, out of 200,000 in the county. They should end up with the same percentage of this program.
Sure.
Close to it. All right.
Ellenville.
Yeah, Ellenville.
Anyway, John Gum. Go on, but your point is well taken, you know, fair distribution. Okay, are we ready to call the question? All right. All in favor of resolution number 341, amending the 2022 capital improvement for ARPA for the homeowner energy improvement and job training program. Please raise your hand and or signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Great. Motion carries. And
I'm adding you as a sponsor, Madam Chair. Is there anyone else that wanted to join beyond this as a sponsor?
Say again.
You asked me to add you as a sponsor?
I would like to be added as a sponsor. Anybody else?
You can add me.
Thank you.
Sure. You're welcome.
All right. We're up to resolution number 345. And again, I'm going to ask Fawn to please read it for us.
345. Adopting proposed local law 1 of 2022, a local law amending the Code of the County of Ulster, Chapter 131, Vehicles, County, Article 1, Sustainable Green Fleet Policy in Relation to Strategies and Goals.
Motion to discuss?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay, that was Legislator Erner and Legislator Hansett. And let's see, any discussion on the motion?
Legislator Erner has his hand up.
Please.
Thank you. I don't believe we got any comment at the session when we had public hearing last month. Does anyone know, have we received any written comments from the public about this?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yes, Legislator Maloney, please. Legislator Maloney, did you have your hand up? You're still on mute.
It's very glitchy. I can't get to the mute today. this is more or less a memorializing resolution about a goal to get to a certain amount of green vehicles in the county. You know, just to reiterate, we have had some issues. We went and spent some big money on UCAT vehicles that are technically green but can only do the Kingston run, because we chose not to spend the money to get UCAT vehicles that could travel up certain hills and farther. when you hear the word green vehicle or green, it's not all the same. And I think we need to dive in a little more. The most green thing you can do with a fleet the size of Ulster County's is to figure out how to reduce that fleet as well. And I don't believe we've done anything with regards to this. I'd love to have a study done, and we would definitely be able to do this in-house. It's not really a study. It's more of an inventory where we get every single vehicle who drives that vehicle, how many miles have been put on that vehicle over the year, and things like that. And you go through, and that's how you really get down to business and figure out how to reduce the size of your fleet, which is the most green thing you can do. I'll remind everyone about these batteries, how difficult they are to get rid of, the toxicity that's in there, the mining that goes to get into the minerals and whatnot that needs to be put in those vehicles, puts quite a bit of carbon out. A lot of these, when you're charging your vehicle many times, we're still burning fossil fuels to charge those vehicles. So green vehicles are not as green as you think they are. Reducing a fleet like this is the greenest thing we can do, and it has no part of this conversation. And I'll just reiterate that this is nothing more than a memorializing resolution of a goal of a percentage. So it doesn't, to me, this is kind of not much. And I would like to have a real conversation at some point about reducing, and I think it starts with the list, and seeing how we can reduce the vehicles we have and not just make them green.
Anybody else? I do want to point out, having just submitted comments for the 7-county Mid-Hudson region, one of the really great suggestions was to develop kits, and these are starting to be developed, where you can take a fossil fuel, an internal combustion engine vehicle, and retrofit it. Because if you turn it in and buy an EV because you want to be part of beneficial electrification, then somebody else is going to buy that used vehicle, and it's not really retired. So they'll be burning fossil fuel. And the other thing I think you were getting at, Legislator Maloney, that I want to agree with, is that we absolutely must put the renewable energy infrastructure and storage in place ahead of the beneficial electrification of transportation and buildings. Otherwise, we will be ultimately burning more fossil fuel. So it's one of the reasons I keep pushing participation in the solar mapping to empower local municipalities to take a leadership role in that transition and get that infrastructure in place in their town or city. And we have a third cohort that started this week. And hopefully, eventually, we will be able to include all the municipalities in the Mid-Hudson region. But I think we're up to about 30. And if your municipality hasn't participated and wants to, we do record so that if you miss a session, the recording's available. Anyway, back to the resolution. And these glasses actually work. Yay, I can read. So if there's no further discussion on the...
Has his hand up?
Who does?
Phil Erner.
Okay, Legislator Erner, go ahead.
Oh, thanks again. I'm gonna support this, I agree. Let's talk more about what a green fleet looks like, and not just for our county fleet, but what does it look like overall in the county? So that includes private motorists, freight, basically all the fleet. And one thing I really would like to point out is that on the passenger side, you can achieve a lot of our goals by expanding mass transit. You can achieve the greening of the fleet. Whatever kind of bus it is, it's better than having that many cars on the road. And it also is the equitable thing to do. And it's also the cheaper thing to do in the long run in terms of maintenance on the roads and maintenance on vehicles. So there's all these good reasons to expand transit. And then, I just hope we can also expand the discussion toward private motoring. I got an email along with a few other legislators today about gas prices again. And I mean, we know here in the county government, there's only so much we can do to directly affect those prices. But one thing maybe that we can do, and this is also cultural work, not just government work, but is figure out how the biggest consumers would consume less, because that also affects the price of things. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Are we ready to call the question? All in favor of resolution number 345, please raise your hand and or signify by saying aye. Anyone opposed? Okay, and for the record, that's three in favor and Legislator Maloney opposed.
All right. Resolution number 351, authorizing the Department of Planning to submit an application to the New York State Climate Smart Communities Grant Program for renewable energy equipment at the Golden Hill Housing Site, Department of Planning.
Deputy Ryder, do you want to speak to this at all?
Sure. So anytime we fill out an application for a climate smart communities grant, they require us to submit a resolution of approval prior to that. This would be for up to $2 million in grant funding that would, you know, help offset the goals of as close to net zero on that housing development as possible. If the grant application was successful, the county would be taking a environmental easement over the property. And there is a match requirement, but we believe that, and we are working with the funding source to make sure that either the jail demo costs would offset the match, or we could pass the match costs on to the developer. It would not be additional county funds for this grant.
Okay, any questions? Legislator Maloney?
Should we move it?
We need to move it.
Yeah, I'll make a motion to move it to for discussion.
And Legislator Erner seconds?
Yes.
Can you quickly describe what you meant by that easement part?
So this is not apples to apples because it was for the RRA, but we've filled out a grant application. As the municipality, we're the only ones eligible for these grant funds. We've filled out a grant application in the past for the RRA in order to, I think it was their composting operations. Nick shaking his head, he may have more details. An environmental easement just ensures that the equipment stays in place. I believe, Nick, you want to step in and explain it a little bit better than I? It's not my area of expertise.
It's something the DEC Office of Climate Change requires for this type of grant. It's called a climate change mitigation easement. And I believe that's the intent, is to keep whatever beneficial changes happened as a result of the project in place for a period of time, and ensure that the DEC has rights to make that happen.
So the easement is part of the legality of getting around the fact that we don't technically own the property, or?
To ensure that, that it stays long term, right?
When did this come onto your radar? When's the first discussion that was had inside the executive's wing about doing this?
Yeah, so Dennis brought this to my attention for the first time late in June. So right before the resolution deadline was the first conversation that I had.
Late June. Do you know the exact date?
I don't. Could I mean, obviously around... before the deadline to submit the resolutions, but I was reviewing resolutions that were submitted, this is the first that I had seen it.
So a billion-dollar corporation developer that we're giving 20 acres of valuable land for around $1 million, which is off an appraisal that they did themselves that we had never seen. We were all told, seemed it was almost contracted that way, that they were going to do the multi-million-dollar demo. We've now paid for that, though it doesn't seem to have affected the ridiculously low price we're going to give this developer. And now, out of nowhere, the head of planning, without telling the executive or any deputies or anything why this popped into his head, has come along with this idea to do a $2 million worth of work. And it's going to be a last-ditch effort to ever even ask the billionaire developer who's virtually getting this property for free in a process that doesn't seem transparent or fair to the taxpayer just a couple of weeks ago. Isn't that odd?
It happens all the time. I mean, we are currently
I'll tell you when it happens all the time. It happens when on June 21st in the city of Kingston, they're making this developer to get through the planning process, fill out an environmental application of some sort that Penrose fought tooth and nail because it's not an environmental project. You're now telling me literally a day or two later, the head of planning who's been pushing for this project in more than one way, because he's also on the housing, he's a member of the housing corporation that gets to make decisions, and he's the planning director, which is a duplication of services that I think there's ethics charges in on, is now pushing for this to become a green project. And you don't think it has anything to do with the billion-dollar corporation that needs it to look this way to pass the Kingston Planning Board?
This has always been a green project.
Not according to the planning board meeting I saw from the 21st.
The original RFP.
And it just lines up perfectly with the timing. You think it's appropriate to do more million-dollar work for this billion-dollar developer that we've never even done an appraisal on? At the same time, the same people inside the executive's office want to buy a $4 million brownfield from somebody in New Paltz. We're going to give this property that's probably worth 10 times that property away for $1 million. Mark, at some point, don't we have to do things right? I mean, at some point, do you always have to follow the party line? Do you always have to pretend everything's okay when it's blatantly not? I mean, does it ever get old? This is bad, Mark. This is a bad deal, and I hope we vote this down.
I'm not going to answer
I'm talking to my colleagues now. I hope we take a further look at this and we don't just pass this right now. This is millions more dollars for a developer on property we're not even going to own. We just bought two pieces of property in the city of Kingston. Why don't we do it on that county-owned property? I mean, for God's sakes, we're putting people in Greene County now because of these homeless shelters, and we're putting Elizabeth Street on the back burner while we work for this developer. Please, Manna, Phil, and Gina, please, let's postpone this and have further talk. This doesn't make any sense.
Any other comments? Legislator Erner?
Thank you. I share a lot of the concerns that Legislator Maloney has just raised. I think if we went ahead and approved this, I was not wanting to move ahead on this even before hearing those comments, and but a lot of which we've known about and before. One thing that reassured me that makes me feel like okay to move ahead, although I'd be willing to suggest we also postpone for a special meeting before session, maybe to get some more information. The fact that this is, let's say that Penrose in the end doesn't agree with everything we want to do or like even walks, but we still want to have a low income housing project up there. We still have that possibility. And as we've heard from the deputy executive, the funds that we are now expending, that I wasn't ready to, but the majority of the body was. We moved ahead on the jail demo, or we're at least approving ARPA funding for it. Anyway, there might be another way for us to find that match, in which case the state will be supporting the county's efforts to do this energy thing. Now, there are some caveats I saw in the application around public and low-income housing, and I heard in another committee from Director Doyle and about how, well, we're seeing if this will qualify because the project, it's still not clear to me. Is it totally low-income housing? Is it partly workforce housing? I think there's supposed to be senior housing in there, but that's going to be up to you guys and executive to negotiate with the state. But I guess I could support this right now, again, because it doesn't really commit us to something that we don't want to commit to yet. We haven't signed the agreement, even though Penrose has offered to pay. And I could also support a postponement to before session. I know that there's a deadline on this that's the week after session. So postponing for a month, we would give up the chance to do this.
If I may, it was going to ensure that as an easement, that as the project moves forward, that there are additional environmental considerations. You know, whether you agree with how the project was developed, you know, it seems to me that that adopting this will further protect the environment. So, and since you pointed, that was going to be my question, would a delay invalidate or, you know, take away the opportunity? Any other comments? I think at this point, we have moved it and it has been seconded.
I'll make a motion to postpone.
Is there a second to postpone?
And by the way, there's a June 21st planning board meeting in the city of Kingston that's online. An hour and 34 minutes in is where they discuss the sustainability checklist, which is what led, I believe, the executive's team to this at the exact same moment. And at some point, is the billion-dollar developer going to expend any money, or are we just going to build it for them? That's what we're doing so far. I made.
Legislator Hansett.
Deputy Director Ryder, if we did postpone it, how would it have an effect on the funds or any grants or anything?
The application's due in the month of July, so if it was postponed for a month, then we would not submit this application. You might as well vote it down.
The application's due July 29th in the backup.
Oh, if it's July 29th, we will. Oh, this is July. Sorry. I think those drops affected my brain as much as my eyes. So we are in the process of calling the question.
Chair Green?
Yes, please.
So Legislator Maloney moved to postpone, and I'm wondering if we might invite any members of the public on here who have an opinion to share it.
Yes. It was suggested earlier that there might be one person that could represent the community. Is that possible?
That's a Glenary Boulevard issue with regards to Central Hudson. This is Golden Hill.
Somebody has their hand up.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Kaylee? I had planned on speaking later if you'll have me, but I just wanted to support Legislator Maloney. This completely ties into having more transparency and more information before these large deals are made, before residents and the environment is taken into account. And I would hate to see something pass where we didn't know 100% sure how this is going to affect everyone. That's all I'll say.
Okay. Does anybody else want to comment on this resolution?
May I offer a comment?
Yes, please, Ellen.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I am offering a comment this evening with the way that the resolution is referring to the project at Golden Hill as low-income housing. This is very troubling to me and to other residents that live in the area, because this project has been dubbed all along from the county and from Penrose as a mixed income, intergenerational and workforce housing project. So we have asked from the very, very beginning, what type of a project is this? So now this resolution is offering a $2 million grant to Penrose when we have already spent 1.5 or approved 1.5 million for the demolition of the former jail, and Penrose has not anteed up anything. This is not fair. So my question is, what exactly is this project being promoted as? Are we going to be a senior complex? Are we going to be mixed income? Are we going to be intergenerational? Workforce housing is middle-income housing, comprised of apartments with average income rents that hover modestly above the rents required to qualify for low-income subsidies. So what are we going to have? I would like to know. And I thank you for your time.
And Chair, if I could just point out,
okay,
why now and why this property? With so many different places we could have attempted to do something like this, why do it for a billion-dollar developer after we've already done so much? This process has been so, so untransparent and so unfair to the taxpayer. We're now, the chair of the legislature is now agreeing with me to have an actual policy about having two independent appraisals done. We are acknowledging that we have already allowed this firm to take great advantage of us, to the point at which I would almost say it's getting to the point of corruption. This is such a bad deal, it's hard to explain it for the taxpayer. It's hard to explain how we are negotiating with this firm and we just, without ever seeing an appraisal, and the appraisal is blatantly low. And now the demo, the question marks around the demo, they were going to do it, now they're not. Now this, out of nowhere, literally maybe the next day after this firm needs the property to be green, the next day, June 21st, that's how I knew what Mark was going to say when I asked him. I knew it was going to be late June because I knew what happened in the planning board meeting. I think there's one more citizen from over there that just got on. Perhaps we can give him the floor.
Before I want to ask a process question. Originally, I believe Legislator Erner, when he was thinking about the possibility of postponing, mentioned a special meeting so that we could reconsider in time for session. So it would be between now and session. And I'm wondering if when Legislator Maloney, I don't think you specified that, but I wonder if a short-term postponement might get us some answers if there are specific questions. And also, the idea of deconstruction or demolition has been raised in this discussion. And I really want to see this become a model of deconstruction. So we're also addressing materials management and climate solutions. And that's what the application appears to me, you know, to be promoting. It says for renewable energy equipment, but so I want to ask about deconstruction. I've brought it up before and kind of been assured best available technology, but there are organizations that really specialize in deconstruction. And given the controversy around this project, I'd like to be assured that that's actually going to occur. So
is that a demo? Is that a jail question though? How much of that is involved with this resolution here?
Well, your point is well taken.
And we, Chair, just to point that out, Phil and I put that forward when this was being, the demo part of this was being pushed through, that they haven't even told us how they're going to demo it or how they came up with the price or where along the line we decided to use tax dollars instead of a billion-dollar developer who had originally promised they would do the demo. So this is my point. We keep pushing these things through without ever really knowing what's really going on and why these things are being done. But I will tell you this, it's always the taxpayer that pays the price, and it's always, and it seems to be always these developers and insiders that make out on those tax dollars. And I feel this is another example. I would be for a special meeting being scheduled before session. If we do postpone, I would be a yes on that.
I saw a hand that, and now I see S. Coutinho, but I think it was it Matt Colangelo who wanted to speak before?
Hello?
Did you have your hand up before, Matt?
No, but if you're offering the opportunity to speak, I certainly would love to opine.
All right, well, let's go to S. Coutinho. And if Legislator Maloney recalls who did request to speak.
I had my hand up and I've taken it down. So I know Matt joined late, and that's who Legislator Maloney was talking about as far as giving an opportunity to speak.
S. Coutinho had done applause, I think, not put a hand up.
Okay. I very good. I mistook that. Deputy Ryder, say again what you just said so I can keep track.
I had my hand up before, but I've taken it down. So I know Matt Colangelo joined late, and that is who Legislator Maloney was referring to as far as a neighbor speaking on.
Okay. Matt, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. I mean, I am joining late. I think I've been following this project closely, and I would really urge this committee to listen closely to Legislator Erner and Maloney, who have really invested their time to understand it. In particular, Legislator Erner, who has said a lot of great things that I agree with respect to this project. I think it's being rushed through. Why is it that at this stage that they're now questioning whether or not the project is environmentally friendly? These things should have already been discussed. I think that we're moving at a fast rate, and I'm not sure why. This project could be built anywhere. I think the site that it's being built on has always been an environmental challenge. That's why you build jails on property that nobody wants. I think that we're tearing a jail down to build another one, or at least it seems that way. You know, I think of housing as being a place that you own, not rent. We should build homes and not units. And if we're going to build units, we should do it environmentally friendly. We certainly shouldn't do it at an exorbitant cost to the public. Homes should be things that people own, not things that they pay rent to a multi-billion dollar corporation. So I really think that this committee should do everything in its power to slow down this project. The third thing, and I really want to emphasize, is, you know, who's going to live here? We keep hearing that there's a housing emergency in Ulster County, yet when you ask who the eligibility is, it's a lottery. That lottery is for everybody, I believe, in the country. So there's no guarantee that the residents of Ulster County that we claim need housing will even be able to live there. So I think there's a lot more questions than answers. And I'm not sure that we can rely on the information that we're being given from the one side. And the public has not had an opportunity to participate in this process because there's only been one public hearing on four of the major topics that was held virtually only. So I really think that this committee should slow down this process. And if the project isn't built, so be it. Something better could be built in its place. So I really hope you do everything in your power to slow down. Thank you.
Okay. Legislator Erner, go ahead.
If Legislator Maloney was moving to postpone for the special meeting, then I'd like to second that. Is that where we're at?
I would urge you to pick a date and time for a special meeting because the calendar is really full.
Is there a gap between now and session at all that you can see to suggest?
I can't see all of the meetings, like the chair meetings and things like that. The only opening I see is either on a Friday or Monday the 18th, perhaps, the day before session. There's a trails committee at 6 o'clock, but that's.
What about the 13th following ARPA?
There's one meeting. Commission on reapportionment that night, which I think a lot of legislators are going to want to. It's the last meeting before they turn in their
final. Yeah.
Why can't we do it during just before session, like they do with Ways and Means the second time?
Yeah,
Ways and Means cannot act on this until this committee acts on it. So. If it were to be after the second Ways and Means Committee,
why don't we do it at 5:15 in front of Ways and Means?
I don't believe this goes to Ways and Means.
Okay, then that's fantastic.
But we don't want to conflict, so
I don't think we can schedule a meeting when Ways and Means is going on.
Right.
No, but why right after? They just did this with Laws and Rules the other day, right before session, right after the last meeting.
If you think you can get enough information to hash this out in 10 minutes, then, you know, that's.
Legislator Hanson.
What about 21st?
I called on Legislator Hanson. Hold on a minute, please.
What if it was even earlier on that day?
Like 4?
Yeah, like 4, instead of trying to push it in a 10 or 15 minute time slot. If this is this important, why can't we do it earlier in the day?
I'll be there. The 21st is also very open.
That's after session.
Oh, whoops. I'm on the wrong week.
All right. So 4 p.m. on, because this is Legislator Maloney had a motion to postpone that didn't have a second at the time. So we have.
He'll second it.
So now he could amend. This is a friendly amendment to that motion. And go ahead.
Gina, yeah, you make the amendment.
No, I was just going to say, so if we do this and we have this meeting at 4 o'clock, let's be clear. What is our goal? What information do we want to find out to either move this forward or not.
I think the rest of our colleagues over the next week should hear about these issues and rethink everything about this project all over again. One alarming fact after the other with regards to a billionaire firm taking advantage of our county that no one can argue has done any due diligence and had anything that has said was going to happen go down the way it has. I mean, I know I'm not the only one that has issues with the appraisal and all these other things. Why does this corporation keep getting the best of us? And this is just another example. And if everyone wants to keep saying these are all coincidences, then at some point you have 7 or 8 coincidences and they all cost the taxpayer and they all benefit Penrose. At some point, this legislative body has got to put its foot down. This gives this legislative body the chance to hear this argument. Past practice of this legislative body, I'm not feeling real good, but I'm hoping for once we put our foot down and we let the executives people know that the people of this county, the residents of this county, mostly middle class homeowners, deserve a hell of a lot more from their legislature when negotiating with billion-dollar developers than this. And if the developer wants to be green, then tell them to be green. They're billionaires. They've already made out on us. So that's what I'm hoping the rest
of
the group.
I'm not going to take any more public comment. We'll hear from legislator Ryder. And I just want to say that I don't want to do anything that's going to cause the county to forfeit money for renewable energy or climate solutions.
Can I just suggest something? Since our session on the 19th is at the college, perhaps you would, if you're going to start earlier in the day, do it on the 12th before Ways and Means at 4, you know.
Well, we could just get to the college a little earlier. I mean, this conversation is going to have to happen before that if there is going to be something to pull this back. I think if we got there and just started 30 minutes early, it would probably be enough. I don't think another 30 or 40 minutes on top of that is going to change wherever we end up being at. So the date is
the 19th is session.
Yeah. So the 19th. So, and Ways and Means is in person. Why not just do 5 o'clock in the same classroom? Are we still doing it in the classroom, or do we just hold Ways and Means now?
You'd be in the cafeteria.
Oh, we're in the cafeteria? So why not just do 5 o'clock in the cafeteria? And I would just like to say, if Peter Buffett needs solar, would we give it to him and say, well, it's solar, I just don't want to hold solar up? I mean, at some point, it matters. And with all these properties that we have here in the county, I just don't understand why it's the billionaire firm that's been whooping up on us gets it.
Deputy Ryder.
Yeah, so I just want to point out a couple of just clarifications. So when the request for qualifications went out, there was a bullet point in there that talked about meet the county's goals for a Green New Deal with the use of renewable energy and the utilization of green building practices in both materials and design. So the idea that this grew out of some request for an environmental checklist, which is something that always needs to be done and has been done for the planning board, is just not true. It's always been looked at for this project. This project is a mixture of 30% AMI rents up to 80%, which is where the workforce comes in. It's intergenerational because it involves senior housing and it involves workforce and supportive housing. This is about an $80 million project, roughly. And so the idea that the developer's not spending anything and that it's all on the taxpayers because we're spending $1.5 million, which, by the way, we're getting back in the sale price, or $1.3 million to do demolition, which when asked about the estimate, we said it was an estimate. And then we went out to bid last month and the bid came in at $1.3 million. Our guess was it would be $1.5 million. We were fairly accurate there. We've shown Legislator Maloney the appraisal. I sent it to him last month. He has it in hand. He can see that it's done. It's also been stated multiple times that we will do a second appraisal, and that's what will be the basis for the sale price in the end. This project has had a great deal of public input in both the sessions that Penrose has done, four of them, and through the last 8 months of the Kingston Planning Board process. Individuals like Mr. Colangelo have had ample opportunity to submit written comments. I've seen them all. It's been extensive, and there's been extensive public comment. I have no issues with delaying this for whatever it needs to be delayed this month. I just don't know what other answers anybody's looking for. In last time this came up, we asked for written questions. I'm going to do the same thing again, because there's no questions that I know that any legislator has asked that are outstanding on this project.
Chair, if I could, I was mentioned the $80 million project is quite tax funded. It's not just the millions that the county is putting in and shouldn't be. They're getting quite a bit of state and federal aid, which is why the lottery exists, where we're not going to move many county residents in. One of the questions I actually sent to you was just that. Are we going to be moving county residents in? And you know what your answer was? Eventually, maybe not many of them will be county residents, but eventually they will be, was the answer you gave me.
That's absolutely not accurate. Absolutely
what was the answer? Are we going to be moving in many, many, many people from out of county? And because of the state aid that this group is receiving, which was my whole point, that we could have got a developer in here that we said, look, we're giving you the property for free. It's got the infrastructure. It's got everything there that most property doesn't have. But what we're asking you is no pilot, so the schools get made whole. You haven't guaranteed us that. And I was lied to by Mr. Wiederman in a meeting not too long ago when he said there was no discussions with a pilot. Then I pulled out a Freeman article where there was quotes from him about discussing on behalf of Penrose for a pilot that would take away school. Phil, you were on the meeting. You recall, I'm sure. You can keep shaking your head all you want, Mark, but these things are true. Then answer that question before I go on and debunk the other silly things you were saying. Mark made many statements, put a lot of words in my mouth, and we're going to get to the bottom of this. What was the statement? What did you tell me when I asked, would there be mostly county residents moving in to this property?
I'm paraphrasing because I don't know exactly what I said to you at the time. I said that we, in order to have affordable housing income credits, we have to use the voucher system. Now, that's a lottery, correct. That's any affordable housing project. That's RUPCO's projects. And what you see for RUPCO projects,
it's not every, like that, Landmark, that's not true. That's not that, true. It's that not every, is it's every affordable project that gets certain state aids and tax credits.
Which is every affordable housing project.
Well,
people don't just build affordable housing.
That's not true. No one has ever offered affordable rent, even what we used to call Section 8, without building the building with tax credits. Are you making that statement? Absolutely not. That's not true. Not all affordable housing started out affordable housing, Mark. So it's totally that's just not true what you just said. You can certainly have affordable housing without a lottery, but this was not, we did not arrange it that way. Did you or did you not tell me that it would be a lottery? And did you not, I'm paraphrasing, that eventually they would be residents?
I never said anything about eventually they'd be residents. What we saw in Landmark Place
I'll send it out to the committee following the meeting. I just got the appraisal after months of asking it. And when I got the appraisal, according to you, it was the first time you've seen it. You've been in negotiations with a $1 billion developer without ever seeing the appraisal.
I had no negotiations for the selection of this developer. I was not on the Housing Development Corporation at the time when this was selected. And I was received
a basic price from Dennis Doyle with you on a meeting about what the developer was going to pay. I refer to that as negotiations. You don't?
That it had already been determined at the point that I became
involved. Is that not a negotiation? Oh, okay. So not you in particular, but Dennis Doyle and your colleagues had negotiated. And I was told by you that you and Dennis Doyle had, when I kept requesting the appraisal, had not seen the appraisal. And I believe you told me if they agree to give it to us. So you weren't even sure that they were going to give us this appraisal that Dennis apparently and the county were negotiating off of. He had never even seen it.
Dennis had not seen it. He was not the only one negotiating for the county at that
point. So who was negotiating off of this ridiculous appraisal that the developer did themselves, Mark?
The licensed appraisal by a certified company. Evelyn Wright, the former deputy executive, was the one involved in this process. And the Housing Development Corporation as a whole, which involves two legislators.
And Legislator Maloney, I would like to call on Legislator Hansett.
And with regard to public input, there's been one public comment on four different things, as Matt had stated.
Legislator Hansett, please.
So there's been two appraisals done?
No, there will be a second appraisal done prior to the sale.
Okay.
After we negotiate the price, and then we'll double check and see if the appraisal matches the price. It makes a lot of sense, like when you're selling your house.
So if we, what we're voting on in this resolution is to submit an application. If the second appraisal doesn't come back where we want it, what can we do?
The second appraisal is what will dictate
the
sale price of the property.
So if we start this application process, it's not what we want, we didn't think, whatever, then we can go backwards and we can stop the process?
The second appraisal, so whatever the second appraisal is what the sale price of the property would be.
Okay.
I mean, so when you say go back and reverse the process, what exactly do you mean?
Well, I'm saying if we went forward with this and we start the application process and then the appraisal doesn't come back where it should be, what can we do?
You have to vote to accept this grant.
Right.
This is just the application.
Right. And that's my point right in this moment. This is just to do the application to secure the funds if that's what we want, that $2 million in grant funding, so we don't lose that. So that's number one. Number two, Mr. Colangelo, he had just mentioned, and I just have to do this on a sidebar, about people owning their home. Everybody wants to own their home. I have to disagree. There are some people that don't want to own their own home. They want to rent, you know, for different reasons, jobs, maybe they're only planning on staying in the area for a couple years, maybe for different reasons. So I don't think that is a valid point. And then my third thing was, I forgot. So
I have one last question. In the Housing Corporation bylaws.
Go ahead and then I'll go.
Oh, no, Gina, finish up. I did not. I thought you were done.
No, I'm sorry. It just came back to me. So, if we postpone this to the 19th, again, why are we postponing it? And what do we need to gain to either make a decision or not make a decision? Because I feel like we have had these conversations. And I just want to be clear that all of us understand why we would postpone it. What are we definitively looking for as answers on the 19th? So everybody can be on the same page.
I would like, I mean, I, look, there are people on this meeting that don't live, there are two that live by Golden Hill. The rest, we've got people chiming in and going, yeah, this doesn't sound great. Yes, I appreciate the due diligence. These are regular residents. These are constituents that have no, the only thing they have in the game is that they pay taxes. I think our colleagues, I don't think these conversations, especially this last one, has happened in other committees. And as soon as it's approved and going to be on the floor and we're at the college and it's passed all committees, I don't think you're as likely to have a chance at getting to the point where the legislature says, you know what, this isn't enough. I mean, and another example of what I'm talking about, in the Housing Corporation bylaws, in the bylaws that was set up by the Housing Corporation that has the rights to make all these decisions, basically, because we've handed the property off, they don't have to take, they don't have to go off of the appraisal. If the appraisal doesn't match, they can still move forward. You know, it's just bait and switch every which way. And why would, can anyone here, any of my colleagues tell me why we, before we started any of this, before we did anything with this property, why we didn't have two independent appraisals? We've got zero independent appraisals. Why we don't have two? Why are we sitting here? It's, it defies logic that we would be hearing right now, hey, don't worry. And that's what we just heard. Don't worry. We're going to get another appraisal after we agree upon a price. What happens to all this work and all these things we've decided and all this time wasted if the appraisal comes back and it's a couple of million higher than Penrose is willing to pay? We start from scratch. Why did we ever get to this point without two independent appraisals? And if you polled the 180 to 200,000 people that live in this county, there'd only be a handful of people that wouldn't have an issue with a lot of this process. And one of them is on the meeting right now. And I'm sorry, it's just a coincidence that just the other day on June 21st, that there was a requirement for Penrose to complete the project sustainability assessment form. And then there was a discussion where one person, I believe, on the board said they didn't, quote, find it environmentally friendly enough. This is a concern for Penrose. And just like every billion-dollar corporation, they don't want to spend your own money. They don't want or their own money. They want to spend ours. They don't want to build their own stadium. They don't want to pay for anything. And we have, for some reason, it seems all too often, we have these high-ranking officials on every level of government that's all too happy to make the deal and do it on the behalf of the taxpayers' back. That's why I want to wait a week and let the rest of the legislators, you know, add this to the list of concerns about this developer, its relationship to this housing corporation, and all these alarming coincidences.
Legislator Hansett asked a question that we need to clarify so we can move on. We still have quite a few items on the agenda, and I'm going to say if they're not urgent, some of the new business may need to be postponed till the next meeting.
I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page. If we do postpone this to before the meeting, that there are definitive questions to be asked, not to have discussion that doesn't kind of end. Not that it's not a good discussion, but that we need these answers to move forward. So that's my only point.
So do we have clarity on the questions that we want answered relating to this amendment, to this resolution, by the meeting before session?
I don't know that we do. I think we have some time to send it. Deputy Ryder, you've asked that we submit written questions. I'm willing to do that for myself, just as last time. I don't know if we should put a deadline on ourselves for that, but I think it's okay that we don't haven't formulated the questions right this moment. I feel okay about that. Getting them in like by Monday or something like that, which is still over a week in advance.
All right. Well, we have a motion and an amendment. I think we have to act on the amendment.
So you have the motion at this point stands that you are postponing to July 19th at 5 o'clock at the college.
Right.
And that was moved by Mr. Maloney and seconded by Legislator Hansen?
No. Erner.
Erner. Okay.
Correct, right, Phil?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And you're going to submit questions about this resolution or about the project in general? I'm just not clear.
And that's what I would like clarification on.
I think Mark would answer. I mean, I've asked a lot of questions through email. I'll print those out and bring them, some of the things that I just discussed before, in writing through text and email, and the responses I got, which I reiterated. I don't think Mark would have a problem with anybody writing a question. See, sometimes you can say, look, we should only be talking about what's specific to this resolution, but I happen to think all these things are related when it comes to the property over there on Golden Hill and this developer and what this developer has been allowed. It's cumulative to me. So, I mean, I do think part of the process has to part of the conversation still should be, hey, all right, we let you go. They didn't do the demo. Hey, we caught you red-handed. You didn't do your own appraisal or a second. Hey, you know, there's conflicts of interest here that are still before an ethics board. You know, 40% of the housing corporation, that I do want to ask Mark on the record to answer me that. Can this housing corporation accept, make an offer with Penrose that does not match the appraisal?
I am going
to. I have to go back and look. So if you put that in writing, I'll answer it in writing. I don't have the bylaws in front of me.
But you're telling us a moment ago not to worry because we're getting a second appraisal. You're representing that you know.
The second appraisal will be the basis of the sale price.
According
to. I don't know if the bylaws say. Why wouldn't it be in the bylaws of the Housing Development Corporation?
As chair, I'm going to stop. I'm going to ask that we stop. We're going around in circles. We're repeating ourselves. If we pass on postponing, I'm going to ask that the questions be related to the resolution. I believe that's proper procedure, that if we're postponing, that the questions be related. So at this point, I am going to call the question, and the question is on the motion to postpone. And Fawn, would you kindly read the date and the time so we're all clear on that?
We're postponing till July 19th, the day of session, at 5 o'clock, half an hour before Ways and Means, and the meeting's at the college.
Thank you. And it's not virtual. It's not mixed. It's at the college. Okay. All right, all in favor of the resolution to postpone? Anyone opposed? Legislator Maloney, I didn't see your hand or hear you.
I am a yes, and I did just find the bylaws disposal of property for less than fair market value, FMV. It is in there. They don't have to go off fair market value. I am a yes to postpone.
Okay, so... Resolution number 351 is postponed. Resolution number 352, authorizing the Department of Environment. Whoops.
Manny, you want me to read it?
Yeah.
Authorizing the Department of the Environment to submit an application to the New York State Water Quality Improvement Project Grant Program for Water Quality Projects, Department of the Environment.
Okay. If Nick is still here, Nick, would you like to just be sure everybody's clear about what this resolution is and why?
Move to discuss, Chair Green.
Thank you. I'll second. Go ahead.
This is a similar timeline to the previous resolution. There's an application deadline of July 29th for this program as well. These are both part of the consolidated funding application process. We are proposing to submit two applications. that are both related to water quality. The first is for a culvert replacement on a project for which, through previous grant funding, we've completed a final design or a complete detailed design of a culvert replacement for a road stream crossing in the town of Woodstock on Wittenberg Road. This is work that, if it were funded, the Department of Public Works would complete, and the grant would help to pay for the materials primarily on the project. This particular project was identified as an opportunity to improve aquatic organism passage, and that's where it aligns with the grant requirements under the water quality program. Second project, we're proposing to apply for funding to complete is, or to assist, is a salt storage facility improvement project that is a already a capital project in the capital plan to replace fabric roofs on 6 salt storage facilities at public works highway substations around the county.
And are they both under resolution 352?
Yes.
Okay. And I should know that, but I've just come out of a very deep tunnel of focus, so getting my sea legs. Anyway.
The resolution requests authorization to apply for up to the category maximum for each of those two projects, but that may not be required based on the scope of the project. So that's something we're determining now with Public Works.
Is there any discussion? Any further discussion? Legislator Roner?
Thank you. I noticed in the project subtypes, high priority and low priority, and it looks like, it's the case that we're trying to replace the roofs on the salt, and we're not building new salt structures, is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, we would not, we would get fewer points for scoring for that aspect of the project, that it's a replacement rather than a new construction.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments? I'd like to call the question on resolution 352, authorizing Department of Environment to submit an application to the New York State Water Quality Improvement Grant Program, as just discussed. Will everyone in favor please raise your hand or signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The motion carries. And now we're going to go to new business. I'm going to start with the new business that was put on the agenda a little earlier. And then I will ask Legislator Erner if any of the new business that he proposes for us to talk about could wait until August. And then we will do old business as well, some of which I think we've covered. But we mentioned the Reuse Innovation Center, which there is budget in the capital plan to do a feasibility study. That RFP has been issued, and they are at the Department of Environment is asking for a representative from this committee. So I would like to volunteer, since I've been following this process and actively participating in its evolution, to be the designee from Energy and Environment and Sustainability. But I also, if somebody else wants
I second to volunteer, you.
You know, I want to be sure that that's the will of the committee. So,
you got it.
Thank you. All right. So we will need a motion, just a motion and a second.
A motion.
Okay. Moved by Legislator Hansen, seconded by Legislator Erner. All in favor, please signify. Okay. Anybody opposed? All right. Motion passes. Phil, is there any new business that is more urgent, that we should, I'll leave that up to you because I don't have your list in front of me.
Well, thanks, Chair Green. Let's start with the issue that many of the members of the public are here to hear about and perhaps talk about, who've waited so patiently. And Legislator Maloney might also, if you'd an invitation to start us off, since you were at a recent meeting about the matters that the Esopus Neighbors group has brought to our attention.
Sure, I'll go really quick on it and hand it over to, well, I believe one resident over there wants to kind of speak on behalf of everyone. Central Hudson built their training facility over there. In the town of Ulster, we've all driven past and seen it. It's ongoing. I think there are some things that you could prioritize differently. I don't think anything's minor, but tree lines, not having any buffer anymore. You worry about air quality, especially when there were more trucks going in and out. To me, the biggest issues, and I've been over there, I've been to meetings between the citizens over there. I think they have monthly or quarterly meetings. I was at the last one and asked a lot of questions of Central Hudson. There are some serious drainage issues now that have begun. You have serious property damage. I've seen the property damage. You have a couple of people over there that have the water is washing through in a way it never has, really hurting property. It's making its way to the Esopus. I've seen it where it goes in. It's an issue, especially when you're wondering about what is going on over at Central Hudson and what is in that water. It's also obviously adding to the turbidity. You have residents that live right next to this that are having these water issues come into their property that still are on wells. So we have drinking water concerns. And it goes underneath, and it looks like we may have an issue where it's starting to undermine a CSX area of the track, which even CSX and Central Hudson have acknowledged as a concern. So you have CSX acknowledging to the residents over there and Central Hudson in a meeting with me, and I'm hearing with my own ears, that there is concerns of a possible derailment issue down the road if this continues. Where we're at right now is Central Hudson is pointing the finger at the town of Ulster on one side, saying it's the town of Ulster's fault that water is coming from the road area onto their property and washing through, and they're blaming the other half on the CSX and culverts that they claimed in the meeting were clogged, which the residents and CSX went over there recently and saw weren't clogged. They're completely clear. And their holding pond seems to be normal. To me, looking at this, this is an issue with Central Hudson, but you have $2 billion corporations, if they're both considered regular corporations, pointing the finger at each other, and you have residents along there. And now that this is up in the open, it's on the record. If there is a train derailment down the line and there is fatalities or serious injuries, I mean, you are going to have a lot. There's going to be no more plausible deniability. I've been there, I've walked the property, and I've heard with my own ears Central Hudson acknowledge concerns about an eventual derailment. So there is real, real issues over there. Like I said, they'll have some others. There's a couple of others. I think the main issues, the Esopus Creek, the property damage, the drinking water contamination, and a possible train derailment worry down the line if this continues. The best I can understand, the best I can see, I'm no expert, but I do think the county needs to get involved. Central Hudson claimed to me that they would love the county to get involved because they're blaming CSX. They've said they've reached out to CSX and CSX more or less ignores them. The community over there is getting a different story from CSX, saying that they've been in contact with Central Hudson quite a bit and that it is actually Central Hudson's drainage that is overflowing their holding ponds and their culverts, which for the last 100 years have been fine. So you can hear from Catlin now, but I do think it's something that the county, the government's going to need to get involved in this.
Could I, before I call on anyone, could I just ask, this seems like a matter for DEC. You know, if it were a county culvert, then Department of Public Works. But if it's a this is private, then there are enforcement agencies. And I go ahead.
Well, on that real quick, they were receiving fines at one point. The DC seems to have done as much as they're going to do. I don't know why, but we are the Ulster County government. They are our residents, and at the very least, I think we need to attempt to bring them to the table. I would love to see a standing committee or a special committee created where we invite all parties, Central Hudson, CSX, Town of Ulster, the residents, or some representative residents, and have the County of Ulster oversee that meeting and get it out there. We can spend, look, if we can buy, you know, a former legislator, a $600,000 geothermal heating system, and we can put things on private, build things on private property, certainly we could order and pay for a study to go in, especially if we got the approval from CSX and Central Hudson, which I doubt they'd tell the county no, and go in there and find out what's really going on, and then we'd know. But I do think jurisdictionally we need to get involved in this, because these residents are getting left out to dry, which is kind of a pun, but it's not okay. And if we're not going to do it, and the DEC doesn't appear to be doing it, and the Town of Ulster doesn't seem to be stepping up, the county should. We step into things I don't think we ever should. I think this is something we should definitely step into.
Legislator Erner?
No, thanks.
Okay. And I do want to put in a word for, it used to be Ulster Sullivan Mediation. I believe it's conflict resolution, something or another.
The Dispute Resolution Center?
Yes. This is something that if all parties were willing, they are extremely skilled, and the more we use conflict resolution and mediation and collaborative, solution-oriented conversations, and I can tell you, having facilitated some where people were in court with each other and wouldn't even be in the same room, they were so hostile, that if you can turn that dynamic around, that's when you get the best possible solutions. I will call on Legislator Ryder, and then who is the person that is representing the community? Is there one person?
He does do petitions to discharge, but he is not technically a legislator.
Kaylin, I believe, is the spokesperson for this group.
All right. I see Kaylin's hand, and then maybe one other, but I saw Legislator Ryder's hand first.
Thank you. I take that as a compliment, Chair Green, that you're calling me a legislator. So what? The only thing I want to just point out is, like, we have some really good engineers in public works, and happy to have them go out and at least evaluate culvert sizes and whatever we can do. And happy to, as much as we can, coordinate a public meeting with these folks. I think jurisdictionally, this is really in the Town of Ulster Building Inspector Department. If there's deficiencies, then, I mean, and we can get them together and we can have them go out on site with some members of DPW, but they're the ones that can violate and do that kind of, like, give out violations and code violations and stormwater runoff. And I mean, we might also, if what you're saying, Legislator Maloney, is true, that and there's actual risk of a derailment, like the FRA or somebody that you know governs railroads should really be involved in this. It's a much bigger, you know, thing. It goes back to, unfortunately, we don't have jurisdiction over a railroad, going back to the railroad barons. So, but the FRA, like, you know, we can try to have all of these groups do a standing committee or a forum, you know, for people to speak out. I have no problem doing that. I just want to put expectations out that we don't have a lot of, you know, enforcement jurisdiction.
Exactly. They would be invitations, you know, and so far all parties seem to be saying they'd be willing. Mark, I'll give you a call tomorrow and maybe we can coordinate on coming up with some kind of a way to invite all these parties in and have some of the residents have a seat at the table as well, and maybe the county mediates and gets to the bottom of what's going on. But as far as a normal mediator that used to be used between residents that aren't talking, these are $2 billion corporations. The county is going to need to be involved. The DC is going to need to be pulled back in, and the town of Ulster needs to step up and start getting with it.
I would also suggest that you reach out to Legislator Cahill, if it's in his district.
It's Dean's district, and I've mentioned it to Dean. I'll talk to Dean tomorrow as well.
It's in Dean's district. Okay. You're all legislators tonight. Kaylin Sanders, please. I see your hand.
Yes, thanks so much for having me. And I just want to thank legislators Maloney and Erner for kind of coming to our aid here. Just to kind of zoom out a little bit, this is more than just a flooding issue. Basically, I represent a group of about 50 people that are around the perimeter of this training facility that was green-lighted by the town without adequate vetting for many environmental issues which fall under your committee. And basically, it affects everyone downstream on the Esopus. So it's not just us 50 people, it's the towns of Ulster and Saugerties all the way into, you know, the Hudson River. So this training facility has caused noise pollution, sound pollution, displaced millions of wildlife, clear cut almost 50 acres of land. So it's way bigger than a flood, but I'm going to focus on the three biggest issues right now, which are the CSX train derailment, the water quality. We have no idea what that site used to be a former lumber yard. We have no idea what's going into the well water, and the flooding, which are threatening our homes and our property values. And so while we definitely want a seat at the table, like Legislator Maloney has suggested, and we've been talking with them for a year on these issues. We've submitted a letter to the town and gotten no response. We've asked for 7 things, and most of them are studies, just so we know what's going on and how we're being affected. And we've gotten no response. We've sent letters to editors. We've contacted so many people in the sustainability committee or community that don't even want to touch this, because they want to be paid, and rightly so, but we don't have the funds to afford that, and they don't want to get political. So it's just been, you know, it's been a year, really, of lack of, you know, quality of life. It's affecting everybody, down our, you know, in our community, and could potentially create other environmental disasters. So we're asking for your help, whatever you can do to try and ameliorate some of the most threatening issues we would love. But ultimately, this is a story about the town and Central Hudson not actually having reverence for the environment. They basically just came in and seized the land and didn't adequately vet what they were going to do and how they were going to affect residents and the environment. And so ultimately, we'd love a long-term solution as well, so that this doesn't happen to another community. So that's all really I wanted to say. Again, I appreciate whatever you can do in terms of getting us some relief and getting some solutions to this, but also thinking long term and so that this doesn't happen to another community. And that's my piece.
Excellent. And I know that, we have a really excellent Department of Environment, so I'm glad that Nick is here hearing this as well, in terms of, are there things we could be doing to prevent situations like this? I would entertain one more person. It's getting late and we do have a little bit more business. Well, Kaylin, I think you spoke very eloquently for the neighbors adjacent to the property, and It sounds like if a meeting is convened, hopefully we'll be able to use what I was speaking about, and that is solution-oriented, collaborative conversation to come up with a solution that makes sense and solves the problem, all of those problems that you mentioned, well, except possible contamination from groundwater, into groundwater from the site, but certainly the drainage problems are solvable. And I want to point out that the second major collaboration that I facilitated, we allowed the lawyers to be present in case there were legal questions. We had the stakeholders participate in a solution-oriented process. And if anyone knows of the old quarry in Quarryville that was filled with 600,000 tires, that was the first case, and people were in court with each other going like this. And when we got them focused on creating solutions, their values became additive. And I understand well that Central Hudson is now a subsidiary of Fortis, and they're looking out for their shareholders, but it has to be done in an environmentally and socially responsible way. Okay.
Chair, can we just put that on? Can we agree to put that on next month's old business? So we
for an update.
And I will be hitting Mark up tomorrow to start the process of requesting a friendly get together of all parties to see. Ultimately, I hope to kind of agree on a neutral firm or study to figure out who truly is at fault, maybe multiple people, for this drainage, these drainage issues in particular. And then from there to figure out who's going to pay for the, you know, it may not even be that much, you know, for another drainage pond or a couple of culverts directing it towards Central Hudson's drainage pond or whatever else. But it starts with getting all the parties together, and I'll be hitting Mark up tomorrow, and I'll update everybody, and I'll be, I know a couple of the residents over there and have your phone numbers, and I'll let you know over the next week or so if what's going on. And I may need to get Catlin's, you have some contact information for some people from CSX, so maybe I'll go through you on that. Maybe Mark can talk to Central Hudson, and we can go from there. We can all call town of, I'll call Jim. All right. Thank you. So it'll be on old business.
You'll reach out to Dean as well?
Yes, and I'll talk to Dean tomorrow as well.
Yes, if I could just add, too, that our Department of Health would probably be able to do some testing of the well water, since I'm reading what Legislator Bruner wrote out there. So we can at least arrange for it to happen, and maybe we'll see if it can be on Central Hudson's dime and not ours.
All right, Catlin, if you could get me could get me the list of the residents on that short strip that have wells. Sure. I know I talked to the one individual, and then I'll get that to you, Mark.
Great.
All right. Any other new business that needs to be tended to tonight? Okay. In terms of old business, I do want to be sure folks know that the Climate Smart Committee regularly meets on the fourth Monday of the month, and we will in July, but in August, it'll be the fifth Monday, and Department of Environment is sponsoring a Climate Smart Community Summit, but it's not limited to Climate Smart Community members. It will focus on some of the news that these Climate Smart Committees should be aware of. But it's open to anyone, and I'll be reaching out to the Climate Reality Project. There is a new Hudson Valley Climate Action Network, and and a lot of nonprofits that are working on climate issues and climate solutions. So I think it's going to be very worthwhile, and it's going to be hosted at the Rosendale Rec Center on Route 32 by the pool. Same time, or I think a little bit earlier, if I'm not mistaken.
It's 5 to 8. So it is earlier.
Right. And then I mentioned the Ulster County Fair and the Green Living Expo. And I really encourage, you know, there are businesses in this county. I just want to tip my hat to Hannaford, who have set 100% renewable goal for all of their facilities in New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Vermont. They're really being extremely proactive, managing refrigerants well, and very aware of what is needed for climate solutions. So I'm going to try to encourage them to showcase what they're doing. And I think there are enough people that care about the environment, and especially about the climate crisis, that if they know that there's a facility taking leadership, that they will, you know, it'll be good for their business to showcase what they're doing at the Green Living Expo, at the fair. And if anybody else knows of businesses, I know Bread Alone is doing a lot of, and I did ask Nick if he would talk to Michael Darcy and see if we can reach out to those that are either certified with the Green Business Challenge or in the application process. So, you know, that means if they're in the application process, they're doing good things and they're heading in the right direction. And I want to thank everyone. It's been a challenging meeting. And I see Legislator Erner's hand, maybe to make a motion.
Well, I would love to, but I did want to just, we can clear a couple of these items in like 2 minutes off the list so we don't have to deal with them in the future. Or we don't have, I don't know if that's true, but I can talk about them real quick, if I might.
Yes, go ahead.
The first is that about CHIPE. As we know, we memorialized the IDA to not grant a pilot, and there's really no update. I heard from the CEO, Rose Woodworth, they haven't done anything yet. So that's no news. We don't know if that's good news, but just keep an eye on that. I've asked the IDA to let us know if when that comes up on the agenda, and to let the whole whole legislature. So that's that update.
Before you go any further, I just want to say that Legislator Petit and I were at a meeting with the IDA, and this was, I'm going to say, about a year ago, and we had a wonderful conversation with them, and they were planning to give a higher ranking for sustainability. Which includes climate solutions. I don't think they've ever acted upon that. So if you're in communication with Rose or any of the IDA members, it's an idea that was a good idea at the time, but I haven't heard any. And also, I think it would be good if they take action on that pilot. But as you say, no news, maybe good news. All right.
Just an FYI, Rose is no longer with, they did not renew their contract with Rose's company, so she's no longer with them.
Okay. Who is our legislative, there's somebody, there's a liaison from the legislature to the IDA? No?
Okay. Not that I'm aware of, they do report to the economic development.
Yeah. All right. Go ahead, Legislator Erner. You have other items.
Okay. Other quick thing. Let's see here. What's quick? just following up with and thank the I want to thank the SOPUS neighbors so much for giving us their time tonight and sharing their concerns. And I had suggested a possible, if this works with us basically being a moderator or referee, maybe we go further and create some sort of formal role that the county can play when this happens. But we don't necessarily need to discuss that tonight, but just planting that seed out there. That just wanted to say that after their presentation. And the only other thing that's quick is just you know what? Never mind. I'm done. Motion to adjourn.
Okay, we can get back to it in August. And we'll see everybody a little bit early on, is it the 19th? Do I have that?
19th.
Okay. Is there a second to the motion to adjourn?
Hansett. Yes,
Legislator Hansett and a third by Legislator Maloney, all in favor. All right. Anyone opposed? Motion carries. Meeting is adjourned.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you all.